The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast is being brought to you by Loot Crate. If you're looking for gear, collectible housewares, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises, look no further than Loot Crate. They offer a range of geek and gamer items for less than $20 a month. And if you want to take it to the next level, you can check out the Loot Crate DX, which gives you even bigger, better loot. If you're looking for some clothing, they've got Loot Wear, which is the monthly wearable and accessory subscription. They have a whole bunch of stuff over at lootcrate.com. And September is all about speed. The September Loot Crate has high-octane assortment of goodies from Batman, CW's The Flash and Arrow, Battlestar Galactica, Iron Man, and Gone in 60 Seconds. If you have a style need, you'll love the Speed Loot Wear Collection featuring Sonic Socks for when you've got to go fast, a Transformers wearable for your world-saving needs, and a winning Mario Kart t-shirt, and a whole lot more. You can look for that in the Loot Wear Collection coming out this month. You have until the 19th, though, if you want to get this Speed Crate. You have until the 19th at 9 o'clock p.m. to subscribe and receive that month's crate. But if you miss the cutoff date, well, you're going to be out of luck. So make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/spoilers, enter the code spoilers, and save on any new subscription. That's right, lootcrate.com/spoilers, enter the code spoilers, and save. Thank you, Loot Crate, for sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, comics, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Major Spoilers Podcast, our continuing mission to boldly talk the talk, review the comics, and bowl the kick butt bowl of the week. Plus, we're gathering the magic, and you're the first to know, so join us as we boldly split infinitives that no man has split before, because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 694 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. That was Matthew. You need some work on your Picard impression, but you know, I give it a 3 out of 5. So, you know,
okay. First of all, that was Janeway. Second of all,
a little bit more work.
You are so derisive.
Am I?
I give it. I just
do. You really? Okay. Let's get to some news and see what you have to give. We've got 3 items this week. We've got the regular show won't be so regular after season 8. Batman Return of the Caped Crusader gets a theatrical release, and Magic the Gathering Kaladesh cards magically appear at Major Spoilers. Let's spin that wheel of destiny. Let us see where we land. Oh, it lands right there on Magic the Gathering Kaladesh cards magically appear at Major Spoilers. What? So, apparently, Rodrigo, there is a new block of, was it a whole new, what is it called? A whole new set, a block? What is
so
this called?
Both. Actually, in this case, both are correct. It is a new block because a block is composed of 2 sets. So a new set, which kicks off a new block.
Ah, okay. Nice. So this new one is Kaladesh. And I kind of, you know, I know that there's supposed to be a story surrounding all of these sets and all these releases and everything. And I've really not really understood it because, you know, unless there's a book or something that's supposed to go along with Magic the Gathering. But this one sounds kind of cool where we have Chandra returns home to Kaladesh. It's a world where magic is outlawed, where you're not allowed to use not allowed to use fire magic. And there's something called the Inventor's Fair that's going on where people show off their works. And it kind of feels like a big steampunky adventure.
Yeah, it's the plane that Chandra's originally from. And of course, so this plane was introduced in the last actual core set Magic Origins, and this is us actually going in and exploring the actual plane with a full set of cards. It's great because they were like, okay, well, Chandra is like this impulsive, angry, red aligned pyromancer where should she come from? And they made a great choice of being like, well, she should be from the opposite of that. Like, that's why she left.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in this set, we're exploring Kaladesh, and they're introducing a handful of mechanics. The one that you can see most obviously on the cards on the site are energy counters, which you can then use to spend on things that call for energy. So there'll be things that are like spend two energy to do this or that. And the important thing about it is that rather than going on the creature, the counters go on the player. So regardless of where your counters from, they all kind of on you instead of like, say, somebody kills your creature, you don't lose your counters.
Right. So is this kind of like mana substitute?
It is. I think essentially it's like the cards in this set are going to have this like alternative to mana. It's not necessarily the first time they've done that. You know, there's always been alternative costs in Magic, but it's just kind of like this extra design space that they're investigating. Now, the big new mechanic that's coming from this set is cars. Like they're introducing vehicles.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's where I said the whole steampunky vibe comes from. Because if you look at, I think last week we had some of the other Magic sets. This is after PAX West. Wizards of the Coast had sent us some of the other cards that had that they'd already shown. But I was looking at it and I'm like, here's this flying thing. Here's something that looks like steampunk something or other, and it looks really cool.
Yeah, it's basically because this is an artifact heavy world, they actually have vehicles, and the cards are actually called artifact, and then the subtype is vehicle, and they have a crew rating, which means basically you tap a number of creatures that add up to the power of the crew rating, and then the thing springs to life and you can do it. It's like they all climb in there and go for a ride.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting, because this other thing that the PR person had reached out to me, he was saying Game Watch is kind of this new thing that we're pushing forward in Magic that's kind of like a superhero team. I know Game Watch was part of the last set, right?
Oh, Gatewatch.
Sorry. Gatewatch. What is the Gatewatch?
So in a previous set, there were like the big Eldrazi guys and in Zendikar, and then I believe four planeswalkers came together and exploded two of them. And then the last one flew away, landed on Innistrad, and then that's what was causing the problems in this previous set. So they show up again in Innistrad and they're like, kicking his butt, right? They're literally Magic super friends. And I say literally because there's a deck that is composed primarily of planeswalkers, and that archetype, the way that you have white weenie or red deck wins, is that archetype is called super friends.
Oh, cool. No, I think that's cool. And finally, this, you know, after what, 20 different generations of Magic the Gathering, it kind of is starting to make sense as far as the greater storyline goes.
Oh, sure. Magic, it's always interesting how, like, just how all in Magic is about their storyline, and how, like, completely combative and backwards the format is for delivering a storyline. It's like, you can't tell what's happening from the cards. I mean, you can, but without that through line, it's very difficult to see. So you can actually go to Magic's website read the storyline. They used to release novels, but now they just put it on the website. They just basically have this, every new set has a collection of short stories that goes with it that you can basically read and figure out what's happening.
Yeah, well, as soon as you find out that Fire Magic is, you know, banned, then you get to Chandra's Pyro Helix, and you get this quote, this one's for my mom and this one's for me. Now, it's obviously not her on the card, but you're like, ooh, is that her?
Yeah.
In the Pyro Helix one?
With the goggles, yeah.
Oh, well, who's the woman that's the main one holding the lightning coming out of her hands and everything? Because that's the main image up at the top of the page. That's the main image
From another card. That's from, like, Ether or something.
Oh, okay. And then who's the green girl?
That is Nessa. She's
one of the Gatewatch.
Yeah, she is one of the Gatewatch.
And it's cool because, you know, you look at her and she's new to this area and she's like, I've never seen a world where the ether weaves through every aspect of nature. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. So now she's new to this area and they're going to explore things. And then apparently Chandra has done something bad because you have this impeccable timing where someone has set a Baral has set a trap and he didn't account for this enormous man lion thing jumping out with a battle axe to take him down. It's like, ooh, now that sounds like, I mean, this is like a really cool narrative that goes on just in these three or four cards that we have.
I do like the flavor text of that card because it's like he did not account for the arrival of an enormous leonin wielding a twin-headed axe. And I just assume it's not that a giant man-lion monster is attacking him. He didn't account for that because a twin-headed axe is a ridiculous weapon to use.
He like, was like, well,
that,
clearly.
A weapon that makes no sense. It's like, oh no, we didn't account for improbable weapons.
There'll clearly be a leonin, and he'll probably have a single-headed axe. Oh no, yeah, unforeseen! Like,
oh, no, we did not account for the second axe head.
What shall we do?
You're up in the big city now, Rodrigo. Did you do with the last one, what was it, Innistrad or Zendikar?
The last one was the Shadows Over Innistrad block.
Did you go and do the midnight release thing, parties at all the game stores?
No, that really just lined up perfectly with my new job, which is somewhat exhausting, or at least it was really at the beginning when we were getting things set up. So I kind of didn't have it in me to go out at midnight and play Magic. But we're actually thinking that we're going to try and do this one.
Yeah, because your girlfriend's into Magic big time too, right?
Yeah, she's when we're like two or three blocks out from the game store, like they all get chills and like their milk curdles and stuff because they know she's coming.
This new set comes out on September 30th, comes out at the end of the month. It's Kaladesh. It looks kind of cool. Matthew, you've had a chance to look at some of these cards, and I know you are somewhat familiar with Magic because of working at the comic book shop before. Any thoughts on any of this stuff?
Well, I think it's nice that they have that Jimmy Durante, Mrs. Kaladesh shout out. The idea of the vehicles is something that I'm kind of intrigued by. Mm-hmm. And if anything were going to bring me back into playing Magic, that might. It won't, but it might have. And I really want to see how that works because last arc with the characters interacting, I really kind of like that stuff. I like the way they've been able to put part of that meta story into the game to kind of get around the issue of I have this character who's a super noble planeswalker and I use her to kill everybody in sight.
So right. How do you use the vehicles, Rodrigo? Do they serve as like a giant bash mechanic or something?
So the way they work is essentially a vehicle is a very cheap, very large creature. So for example, it's like a 5/5 for 3 mana.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe even has an ability. But they are not, quote unquote, they're not creatures as long as they're not crewed. So it comes in and it's just a vehicle, so it can't attack. That power and toughness does nothing for you.
Right, when you load it up with people.
Right, when you activate the crew ability, suddenly it becomes an artifact creature, and now it can attack, it can block, it can do anything that a creature can do. But since now your guys are tapped, it's kind of like they're in there, right? That's like the flavor.
Right. And so does it power up? So like if you've got a 3/3 character and they get into this vehicle, does it suddenly become an 8/8?
No, but what it is the crew cares about power. So if you have a 3/3, only one 3/3 can power up a crew 3 vehicle. You tap a 3/3 and suddenly you have a 5/5 going for you.
Or you can tap 3/1/1.
And because apparently all of the vehicles in Kaladesh are basically bicycles. Depending on how strong you are, that's how
there's multiplayer bicycles like they had on the Aquabats.
Yeah. There's also creatures that care about being part of a crew. So let me see if I can find it. There's a creature that gives haste to, it's called Speedway Fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever Speedway Fanatic crews a vehicle, that vehicle gains haste until end of turn. So it allows you to essentially attack right away with your
But Speedway Fanatic, can he only power up red vehicles?
Nope. There's actually no red vehicles as far as I can tell. Oh, okay. All vehicles are colorless so far.
Oh, okay.
At least the ones we've seen. There are colored artifacts in Kaladesh.
Okay, they have a multicolored deck. Okay.
Yeah, there are color artifacts in Kaladesh, which kind of annoys me because it seems that like every set that's like artifact heavy, they're like, okay. We're going to do colored artifacts. That's this guy's thing. And then so they did that in Shards. The new Phyrexia came around. It's like, okay, we're going to do colored artifacts again. Then they did it in Theros. And now they're doing it again. So I'm like, why even have colorless artifacts anymore? Mm. Like colorless artifacts used to like signify a thing where it's like, but now that you can just put color on artifacts willy nilly, kids, get off my lawn.
Everybody has them. My question though is once those creatures are tapped and they're inside that vehicle, if the creatures leave play, does that mean the vehicle is no longer powered and no longer useful?
No. So all of these, if you go, you know, bit by bit on the thing, you're just doing exactly what the word says, right? Mm-hmm. So crew 3, tap any number of creatures you control with a total power 3 or more. This vehicle mm-hmm. becomes an artifact creature until end of turn, right? So mm-hmm. until the end of turn, that thing is active. That means that if it dies, nothing happens to the creatures because the ability doesn't say that anything is going to happen mm-hmm. to the creatures. If any of the creatures die, it doesn't matter because this is doing this until end of turn. There are things, you know, things that you would imagine would happen if, you know, a bunch of little critters were in there. But, you know, magic just kind of gives you that initial spark of flavor and then has you basically be like, okay, I need to activate this thing. So I'm going to put a pair of magic boots on this elephant so that its power is high enough that it can drive this boat, right?
Got it.
It's like, you know, you end up in like actually mostly ridiculous circumstances in magic, but the it's that initial like spark of flavor that they're going for.
Well, Magic Booted Elephant Boat is one of my favorite manga books. So
I mean, it's very viable. It's a very viable strategy nowadays in the meta.
There you go. There's your magic talk, everybody. I know this is a comic book pop culture podcast, but when it comes to gaming, magic is probably the 800-pound gorilla in the room when it comes to games, wouldn't you say, Rodrigo?
Oh, definitely. Magic is the premier card game, like collectible mm-hmm. card game. Mm-hmm. I think everybody else is aiming at them right now.
I found my new comic book store. I found my new favorite comic book store. It is in Lawrence, Kansas, and there's another one in Topeka, Boom Comics. Is really,
great.
Really cool. I had asked a couple of weeks ago about, I was looking for a game store in Topeka, and someone had said, well, if you have time, go to Boom Comics in Lawrence. And I didn't know that there was a Boom Comics in Topeka, but we had shot over to Lawrence in the afternoon on Saturday, and we were driving down Iowa, and my son was like, hey, look, there's a Boom Comics over there. I was like, okay, well, let me pull in. We went in, and holy cow, they have a huge game section. This is a big store. They've got like half the store, the left half is all comic books and comic book art. The right half is all board games. They have game rooms. I think they even have game rooms upstairs. We didn't go upstairs. And then they also have like this huge Star Wars collection like you wouldn't believe. And then this whole one little alcove, which is really a whole room, is nothing but magic cards.
Nice.
And I was like, wow, this is super cool. It's laid out very well. The people were really friendly. I went over to the Boom. We were driving in Topeka, and my son was like, there's another Boom Comics, which mm-hmm. I think is on Gage or Fairlawn or something like that.
Fairlawn just off 21st.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, let me check this out because I want to see if it's this, you know, if it's laid out the same way and if it's basically a, you know, a franchise is what it feels like. It's the same logo and everything. Wasn't mm-hmm. as big. But still had a nice selection of stuff. But if you're in the Lawrence area, go check out that Boom Comics shop and tell me what you think about it, because I thought it was really cool. You've been there, right, Matthew?
I've been to both of them. I spend more time in the one in Topeka. But, yeah, they're really nice stores. They actually, at one point I was in there with Widget, and we were just talking comics junk, and the guy's like, hey, you want a job? And I'm like, oh, please.
You should have taken it.
Yeah, because I need to go down that rabbit hole again.
Sure you do. You love comics, and we know you do too, and Matthew needs a job at a comic book shop. All right, listeners, you can head over to MajorSpoilers.com. You can check out these cool, exclusive magic cards. We're unveiling them first ahead of Wizards of the Coast. You can head over to Major Spoilers, check that out. You can also check out news about the regular show not coming back in Season 8. And
what?
You can find out more about Batman The Return of the Caped Crusaders getting a theatrical release in October for one day only. So if you want to go see it in the theater, you got one day to go check it out. Go get your tickets now. Also, okay. Should mention that if you enjoy our crazy conversations that we have, and we enjoy having crazy conversations, if you listen to this week's Zach on Film, which we recorded just before this, it's a long rambling conversation, but basically we love what we do and we hope that you do too. And if you appreciate what we do and you want us to see more of this stuff, head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Every little bit helps. We're trying to reach our first goal. We are about a tenth of the way there. I'd love to see us hit 100% by the end of the year, and I know we can do it with your help. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. Why don't we get into some reviews?
All right.
I'm guessing last week Matthew was Supergirl number one. This is
last year.
This is a new take on I don't know what kind Supergirl. Of take this is on Supergirl, because we got Supergirl on TV. We have the digital version comic book of Supergirl.
Which is the Supergirl on TV.
Which is the Supergirl on TV. Then there was another digital-only Supergirl that Ashley Victoria Robinson and I had talked about before. Mm-hmm. Then there's a regular ongoing, or is this the new regular ongoing Supergirl that has nothing to do with that, or is this something else altogether?
This is the new 52 Angry Diaper Supergirl.
What do you mean Diaper Supergirl?
Because she was angry and wore a diaper. The character who came in...
she wore a diaper.
I like those big shorts.
Yeah. In 2011, when they relaunched and they had the Supergirl with the sharp S on her chest, who was all, I'm angry. Now I'm a Red Lantern and I hate everybody. This is her.
Okay.
But with heavy overtones of the television series. Well, I don't know. I can't finish a sentence. No. At this point, they have actually taken a lot of the elements of the TV show and they have brought them into the new 52 reality. The reason that I know this is the Supergirl who showed up in the new 52 is they show her arrival on Earth in that new 52 costume with the open knees and the sharp edges and everything. And we get a little bit of a flashback of her on Krypton.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see her new life. And this is the thing. There are things about this that are bothersome. She is now living in National City under the name Kara Danvers, or Kara, I presume, because people pronounce it that way and it makes me mad. And she is ostensibly 16 years old. So she is a high school junior living with Jeremiah Danvers and his wife, whose name escapes me, who Supergirl. Are basically, yeah, it's Helen.
Helen Slater.
Helen Slater, thank you. His wife, Helen Slater. But this is an admirable attempt to make what could be contradictory continuities work together. Basically, she's been on Earth for a while now. She grew up enough on Krypton to remember being on Krypton. But she's having trouble fitting in on Earth with a brown wig and glasses. And she's also working for the DEO under Cameron Chase. And Cameron Chase is even more of a jerk than Hank Henshaw is in the television show, and refuses to let her, you know, get away with anything and go off and do missions on her own. So it really is an attempt to bring the comic continuity in line with what you're going to see on TV,
mm-hmm.
which I'm all for, except for the fact that she's basically a full 10 years younger than the TV version of Supergirl. Cat Grant appears in these pages, a very Callista Flockhart, flippy, angry, Ooh. Derisive Cat Grant.
So we're going to see more of Callista Flockhart, Cat Grant in the comic books than we are on the TV show. Nice.
Possibly. In any case, this is a really strong start for what could have been a difficult proposition. And by that, I mean they managed to convince me that, okay, this could be the same character. She's now changed. She's warming to her life on Earth. She has a secret identity. She's getting used to all of this stuff, but she still remembers her life on Krypton. And the age issue is only really a problem for me because I'm a huge fan of the TV show. I really like the CW mid-20s vibe of that. So it is a little bit difficult to have those same elements in play in a different continuity. But, you know, if I was angry about that, I'd spend all my time ranting at comics. Because new versions of the old continuity with slight changes are kind of the gist and kind of the point of Rebirth. This issue also ends with a big reveal of scariness. And that is the return of Cyborg Superman.
Which, If I'm not mistaken, spoiler alert, isn't that her father?
Yes, Cyborg Superman in this continuity is Zor-El.
For some reason, I could have swore that they wrapped up that story arc already. Didn't they kill Cyborg Superman? Didn't Superman and his son take him down? I'm so confused. DC Comics.
Well, he's clearly not dead.
Obviously, nobody he's a cyborg. I mean, you never can kill Terminator.
But you know what? For the first time in the 25-year history of Cyborg Superman, there is a legitimate viable reason for him to look like Kal-El.
Mm-hmm.
Because the old one was just, because it's a cool visual.
Because we want to trick you.
And also because they can't really use Hank Henshaw without confusing people completely.
Well, Hank Henshaw isn't Cyborg Superman. I haven't seen Hank Henshaw in the New 52.
That's what I'm saying. If they brought him back as Hank Henshaw, Cyborg Superman, it would have totally threw people. Because isn't Hank Henshaw supposed to be Martian Manhunter?
Hank Henshaw on TV is one of the Martian Manhunter's identities. Yes.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's why I think they went this direction instead of the original.
Oh, I can't really speak to all that. I haven't seen anything with either Zor-El or Cyborg Superman in it. I haven't been a regular reader of the super titles, but I can tell you that this is a book that I'm interested in seeing more of.
Cool.
And I really want to see a little bit more of this version of Kara, because I can pronounce it Kara and no one will correct me. And more importantly, there's a scene in here where she saves a runaway train in National City, which was very early on in season one of Supergirl, kind of a big giant hero moment. So I think they are well aware of the problems that they're dealing with here and the issues of trying to streamline these two storylines together. And I kind of feel like I'm in good hands as far as knowing that they're going to get away with that, knowing how to do that in such a way that if you have been watching the show, obviously you're going to see these overtones, you're going to see these nods, you're going to see these issues, but you're not going to have problems with it. Steve Orlando does really good scripting. I am on the fence about Brian Ching's art for a couple of reasons. It's a little bit... It feels a little bit unfinished lines, kind of a very loose, in some cases, scratchy outline. And the characters do look super young. Everybody looks super young. Supergirl is supposed to be 16. She looks about 14. Mm. Her parents look to be about 20. But again, I'm old. And, you know, it's a stylistic choice. And I feel like maybe this is an artist who's going to grow into that and maybe get a little bit more consistent in the way that we're seeing these characters portrayed. And I'm fine with that. I can give it time. It's not like a lack of skill. It's more an aesthetic decision that I'm not sure why it's happening. So if you've seen the covers with cool Supergirl.
Oh, the cover is brilliant. The variant cover where she's flying upside down.
Right.
Oh my gosh. That looks freaking fantastic. Yeah.
So, and the costume has some adjustments to make it look more like Melissa Benoist's costume on TV, which is good because it's one of the best Supergirl costumes, and there have been a lot of them, and most of them are awful. So I'm going to go with Three Slices of Meatloaf for Supergirl number one. It's an interesting new start, and it's aware of what it's doing, which is not always something that happens when you're dealing with how do we make this more like the popular TV movie, whatever it is we have to tie into, you know, where you have a Superman story where Superman is good and kind on the inside and on the outside, we have a Henry Cavill murdering everybody variant. So what are you going to do?
Is the age that big of a deal? I mean, in how Supergirl is portrayed in the comics, do you think?
Well, she's in high school.
Yeah.
And her primary interactions are going to be in high school. So it depends on what you mean by that big.
Well,
of a
I mean,
deal.
You said that she looks like she's 14. She's supposed to be 16.
She looked younger than the way they're portraying her, okay. I guess is what I'm saying. I look at this and I don't necessarily think this is a high school junior. I think we're, you know, well, and again, I have a tall child, but I think, you know, this looks like my kid. My kid's what, 12? 12. So yeah, she looks 12.
Hmm.
Which is bad because that's the general number that I use to make fun of people who are younger than me, like Zach and Ashley. So
I was in my bathroom. I have a reproduction of I forget what issue of Spider-Man it is, but Spider-Man's fighting Hulk on the cover, and they're like way up on a tall building and Hulk's ripping off part of the building. I was looking at that today, and for whatever reason,
more could you want.
More could you want. The more you could want.
Or more could you ask for. Yeah. What is it?
It's really what more could you want. Not what more could you want, but it's like, it's not even what more could you ask for.
Yeah.
It's an actual cover. Yeah.
It says more you could ask for, I think is what it says.
Yes. And I forget what cover that is, but I was looking at that. And I was looking at Spider-Man. I was like, you know, that doesn't look like a teenage Peter Parker. That doesn't look like a high school Peter Parker.
Uh-huh.
It looks like someone who is maybe 25, 26 in the way that the body is built and everything. It looks like someone who is bulkier and older. By the time Spider-Man, let's use issue 100 for reference. How old would Spider-Man have been by the time it hit Spider-Man 100?
20.
Yeah, so see, he's even kind of...
He would have been in college.
Yeah, maybe...
If you're talking about the issue I think you're talking about Amazing Spider-Man number 120, which was a 20-cent issue, so probably came out somewhere in 1971, 72.
What number?
Number 120.
Let me see if that's it.
Hulk has got a big chunk in his hand, and Spider-Man's leaping off.
Yep, that's it.
Ross
that's
Andrew,
it.
I think.
Yeah, that's it. Holy crap, they're selling that thing for $228 online. I got it for
It's a Bronze Age Spider-Man, dude.
Well, no, not the original issue. A canvas print of that cover.
Oh, the poster's 120?
Yeah, the poster is like $228.
Oh, no, that they're hosing you, dude.
No, I got mine really cheap. But, he looks like it doesn't look like... It looks like a grad school Spider-Man in that. And that's why I was wondering, if we can allow Spider-Man, a teenage Peter Parker, to look like he's in his 20s, is it okay for a 16-year-old to maybe look a little younger than that? I don't know.
Well, he would have been in college by that point. 120 is right before Gwen died, which would put it in Peter's sophomore year at ESU. So, I don't know. Again, it's one of those things that everyone in the book looked young, and maybe that's thin necks and big eyes, which is an aesthetic decision on the part of the artist, and I'm fine with that. Umberto Ramos does that. You have I love Mike Allred, and Mike Allred has some things that he does every time he draws that really do distress some people. So
right,
I don't know. I felt it, but maybe four or five issues into it, when I'm really into the aesthetic and there's a consistency of I know what to expect every month, maybe you're right. It's not going to be an issue.
This week, coming out this week from DC Comics, is Gotham Academy Second Semester number 1.
Gotham?
Yeah, Gotham. Gotham Academy. This is the story of the holiday break between the winter holiday break. And poor Olive, because she doesn't have family, basically stays at the academy while it's closed, while all of her friends go home to spend time with family. And she's having a really tough time of it. She's hanging out with the superintendent of the school, the female academy lady. I forget what her name is, the Irish woman or the Scottish woman. And as you do when you're a kid at this age and you're impressionable, you may sometimes get mixed up with the wrong crowd for the wrong reasons, and a new girl appears, and I think she's going to be regular, but she is Troublemaker from panel one. She is the worst person you could ever want. She's been kicked out of previous schools all over the country, and now she's been sent here to get straightened out, and all she wants to do is cause destruction and chaos, and she convinces Olive to break into this art museum that's on campus that used to be this old house. And while they're in there, the girl's just like destroying artifacts and stuff. She doesn't care. She's a rebel, right? This is how rebels act. And unfortunately, she kind of draws Olive into the dark side a little bit until the new girl does something that kind of puts another kid in danger who's also there over the holiday break. And Olive kind of decides that maybe this isn't the person I should be hanging around. Which is kind of a good thing, because the next day all the kids come back from their holiday break, and so she's with her friends again. But this new troublemaker is going to be her roommate in the second semester, and I think there are going to be some problems with that. It is a very nice little touching tale. I love everything that Carl Kerschel and Becky Cloonan and Brendan Fletcher bring to the tale. The art by Sandra Hope and Adam Archer is fantastic. As always, the coloring. Oh, I love the coloring in this book. I love the layouts of this. I just love the idea of Gotham Academy being this very gothic looking place where kids are running around and a bunch of ne'er-do-wells are also next door. They kind of set up a little bit of the mystery for this second arc, or this new arc that's going on to the second semester. Arkham Asylum pops up a couple of times as far as hidden clues. So this is a book to pick up. I mean, in this new 52, in this rebirth era of comics, Gotham Academy isn't seeing any changes. And it's moving ahead, so if you're holding on to the adventures of Olive and her friends, I really say pick up Gotham Academy second semester number one. It's out this week from DC Comics. I'm giving it 4.5 slices out of meatloaf. I thought it was really, really good, and it is definitely worth your time if you like that kind of thing. And I think if you like Supergirl number one, Matthew, I think you'll like Gotham Academy second semester as well.
Cool.
Yeah. Rodrigo, what are you taking a look at? What is this thing?
So this is Carriers from Pilot Studios, okay. Which is
those are cute dogs. The Carriers,
which is it's an indie thing. So Carriers is a team of pigeons.
Okay.
That are outfitted with armor and weapons,
mm-hmm.
and they have adventures.
Okay. Like anthropomorphic or?
Nope. Non-anthropomorphized pigeons, except for the fact that they talk and, you know, have sort of expressions and stuff. But mm-hmm. they have pigeon bodies and fly around and stuff.
Like you do, yeah.
Like you do when you're a pigeon.
Yeah.
It is, I will say, just right off the bat, I kind of have a beef with the solicitation, because it says Carriers is a comedic and action-packed new teen plus comic about weaponized carrier pigeons. There's nothing really comedic in this issue. It is actually mostly graphic violence.
Oh no.
So I took a look at Carriers, Watchers in the Night, which is, Our titular pigeons going up against a team of also supercharged owls.
So there are people here that are weaponizing these birds, right?
I guess.
Or is this like the owls of Hooli Hoo or whatever it is?
No, I think there's like an actual human that is like helping the pigeons, but I think the owls make their own weaponry.
Oh, okay.
There's also a third faction who are hawks, and basically the owls and the hawks have it out for each other. And mostly the action in this comic revolves around the fact that the owls are just dispensing justice, and killing the hawks, and the pigeons are like, no, don't kill them. You don't have to kill people. And that's kind of what this is about. The art is really interesting. It's like, It's really weird. There are times it's like kind of like this weird yo-yo effect where it's like you get into it and you're like following it, and then like the art is going along with it. These are like kind of like cyber-ized, you know, birds with like weaponry and armor and stuff. And sometimes it'll be a panel that just really takes you out of it, where it's like, this is a pigeon wearing a domino mask, you know? And it's just like... You know, which is just like a part of the thing. It's also like really weird, because there are moments in the book where I think the artist is trying to give you a little bit more perspective, where it's just like, this is where this is happening. It's like these pigeons and these owls just like having like a bloody, dangerous, deadly fight. And it pulls out to a street. And they're just like flying above a building, and the street, like there's people on the street and nobody cares. Like, so it's just like, maybe that's, I don't think they meant to.
This is weird because I'm looking through it right now. It's really weird.
It is. It's super weird. It's like, it kind of has this tinge of like European comics, mm-hmm. or Latin American comics, you know, where like, they're just like, well, everybody's a duck And it's like, why is everybody a duck? And it's like, no reason. Everybody's a duck. This is a serious superhero book, but everyone's a duck. This is kind of like that. It's like, you know, it's not, they're not anthropomorphized. I mean, they are in a sense, but they're still birds that mm-hmm. do bird things.
And they're still people doing people things.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, all the protagonists are pigeons and they're kind of like this strike team. But it's not very clear why they are a strike team. But I did just, you know, it seems that there are prior issues to this. Mm-hmm. It's just every issue is supposed to be kind of a standalone thing.
Right.
But it kind of expects you to already know stuff. There's kind of an introductory page that is like, this is who the characters are. I will say that if you have an indie book that is trying to get off the ground, it is a ballsy move to open with a Watchmen reference.
Yes, I see that.
Yep.
I mean, you want to...
Cajones, man.
Yeah, you wanna set yourself up, then definitely go with that thing that changed the direction of comics forever. But you know, I mean, it makes sense within the context of the story. It's funny that they're watching the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't know if that's layered or if it's just like, well, these guys wouldn't read. They're watching a movie. They're like little pigeons watching a movie.
Yeah, but they're one of them saying, "Oh man, that owl is pretty tough." And is that a reference to the owls that they're fighting?
I think. Well, they meet the owls after that.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's foreshadowing of sorts.
Yeah, yeah. What a weird book. I mean, weird as in not like bad, but just weird as in what a concept.
Yeah, it's. You know, we've seen stuff like this before. You mentioned the owls of Gahulihulihu.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Valiant. You guys remember Valiant? That movie about pigeons in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we have seen stuff like this before, but it's rare. And this book just like, it's like if you have like your Valiants and your Rats of Nim and all that stuff, and that kind of sets a line, this book kind of jumps way past it and is like, nope, we're going to be over here. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just unusual. It's just like not something that we're used to. Everything's really weird and it's hard to kind of get a grip on it at times. So it's because it's like, are all animals like this? Like if they ever caught to a dog, is it going to have like tank treads? You know, mm-hmm. like it's just kind of like
dog tank.
Yeah, it's like what is happening here?
Did you get a chance to? They also have another one called Pirate Bay.
I haven't seen that one.
It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah,
yeah. Except it's modern times, but these seagulls are pirates.
Right, right. Okay. Just like it is, just like.
Wow.
It's so weird. There's like nothing really to like compare it to.
It's not even like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's not even like that.
Right. It's just like these animals are just like that. And they have like this mythology and it's like owls mm-hmm. and hawks or falcons or whatever have always had treaty. And then the treaty was broken. And it's like there's like owls wearing hats in it. And it's mm-hmm. like, do owls wear hats in this world? Like if you're a human, do you look up and it's like, oh, that owl's wearing a hat.
Here in this pirate one, they're all wearing pirate garb. And the one that's in the one that you read, the superhero guy with the domino mask, mm-hmm. he's actually like using a computer and watching a computer monitor. And April O'Neil is on one of the monitors. So it is kind of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's giant lizard men running around. This stuff's weird, man.
It is. It's just weird stuff. And it's not bad.
No.
It's just like, I don't know. I feel like when you read something like Mouse Guard mm-hmm. or a book like that, they spend a certain amount of time being like, these are the rules. Mice can do this, but snakes mm-hmm. can't. You know, weasels are like this, sort of, but also different. You know, it's like, but this book just kind of drops you into it. And maybe I was supposed to have read prior issues, but I just, they kind of said that each issue was kind of a standalone thing. So I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, Even, I mean, even there is an explanation at the front, but it's like, these are guys that are having adventures and this guy helps them. And it's like, yeah, but that tells me.
Maybe it's one of those things that's just like, go for it. Just, you know.
No, it is. It is. I mean, it really is. And it's like, and that's the thing, is like, they're telling such a serious story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like this serious story about the implications of like vigilante justice.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you flip the page, and one of them is like this owl with like wearing goggles, and is like, it's so hard to stay in it, you know, because of it. It's just like really weird. It's interesting. It's not bad. The art is good. You know, I'm gonna give it 3 slices of meatloaf. Nothing's bad about it. It's just so hard to get a grip on it.
It's just a weird It's a super super weird concept.
It is.
I think it might pay off. I mean, I was, like I said, I'm flipping through the Pirate Bay one, and it's, again, it feels somewhat like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. More animals are wearing clothes than, I mean, there's a cow on the dock that's wearing like a suit,
I guess.
But they're walking around.
Cows wear suits.
Yeah, I guess.
Owls wear graduation caps.
Burn suit. All right. You can check out more reviews over at majorspoilers.com. Thank you, Rodrigo. And thank you, Matthew, for your reviews this week. Always fascinating stuff in the comic book pages. Always something cool out there. And, you know, I mentioned Boom Comics. There is probably a comic book shop in your region. I wouldn't say in your city, but there's probably a comic book shop in your region. And you should probably visit it. Or if you definitely don't want to have one in your region, definitely check out the digital versions over at comixology.com. And if you're looking for stuff to read, I mean, we try to cover and give coverage to everyone, not just, I mean, we're kind of DC heavy this week, but not just to the big two, but we try to spread the love around to everybody. And Pilot, what is it? Pilot
However Studios? Gross that may sound.
Is it Pilot Studios did this one?
Yep.
So even indie publishers we will take a look at. Great. So there you go. Check it out. Majorspoilers.com. Of course, you're listening to this podcast and you already know that, but if this is your first time, welcome. Glad to have you here. Thanks for sticking around this long. By the time we get done with our reviews, another thing that we like to do is we like to do something called the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week.
Poll of the Week, week.
Poll. So it's a little bit cooler today. High today was only 61 degrees. Now, I'm sure it's much cooler up there in the Seattles where you're at, Rodrigo.
It was hotter than that either.
It's about that. It's a little cooler, but not too much.
Yeah. Oh no, Matthew. It'll be at least that cool tomorrow for you if it's moving eastward.
Yeah, it was like 80 this afternoon. I nearly died.
I had to put on a pullover, and walking outside, walking around, felt like it was fall, even though technically it is still summer. Which brings us to the poll of this week, which is kind of a modification that one of our VIPs, one of our listeners, sent to us. One of our patrons. I don't know if he's switched over to Patreon or not, but patreon.com/majorspoilers. He wanted to know what did we think was the start of summer, but seeing how he sent that months ago, and I'm just getting around to it, I figured we'd modify it a little bit and say, what do you consider the end of summer for you? Now, some people might say it's when school starts back up, but, you know, school starts back up so differently for so many people. Here it starts up about the first or second week in August. Some people don't start until well after Labor Day. Some people don't start until, like, the second or third week into September. So it really varies there for people, about a month. Some people will point to Labor Day, the Labor Day holiday, because, you know, if we have Memorial Day that quote-unquote kicks off summer, Labor Day closes out summer. And some people are like the fall equinox on September 22nd this year is when fall begins and summer ends. What do you do as for the mark of the end of summer, Matthew?
Well, I'm a big believer in the Phil Connors method. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Groundhog Day.
No, I don't think
where,
so.
Groundhog Day basically takes place on February 2nd, and the whole gig is
not
that
summer.
Yeah, but stay with me.
Okay.
The whole thing is that people keep asking him whether he thinks that the groundhog will see his shadow and there'll be 6 more weeks of winter. And guys are constantly asking him, well, you think we'll have an early spring? And he's like, well, I'm predicting February 22nd. It's a douche move, but I have to go with the point where the calendar says it's officially fall for 2 reasons. One, Phil Connors is played by Bill Murray and Bill Murray was cool. And 2, otherwise it doesn't make sense. I used to work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then a Monday morning shift. And all of my coworkers were like, hey, it's your Friday. I'm like, no, it's Monday. It will remain Monday because if I treat it like Friday, it'll still be Monday. And then I won't get to the bank tomorrow because I'll think it's Saturday. So I go by what the calendar tells me, because if we don't have some sort of shared reference point, what's the point of even calling them seasons? I mean, we could call it Gewurztend. So I always go with the vernal equinox, the fall equinox, not the vernal equinox. Is it? No.
No, it's the autumnal equinox.
See, September autumnal. The 22nd, basically.
Yeah. I went with that, too, because years ago, I was in science class. This is like high school. And I was like, hey, yo, Mr. Teacher Man, let's go cook some crack. No, I was like, hey, man, I heard that you can... I heard that you can balance an egg on its end during the equinox. And he's like, no, that's just a myth, you know.
An old wives' tale.
And I was like, well, can we try it? And he's like, I guess if you want to waste time. I got a lecture to talk about mitochondrials, the DNAs and stuff. And fortunately, the kitchen cafeteria was right across the hallway from us. So I just ran over real quick and said, hey, can I get a couple of eggs? And they're looking at me weird, like, what are you going to do with this? And I was like, it's a science experiment. She's like, okay, so we got a couple of eggs, and we let them kind of warm up during the class time while we listen to the powerhouse of your cells. And towards the end of class, right around the exact time that the equinox was occurring, we started to see if we could balance the eggs up on their ends. And sure enough, you can do it. And even my science teacher was kind of blown away, and it stayed there for a few days. And as the days went on, you could see the eggs, because several people had done it. You could see them starting to kind of lean a little bit. And I don't know if that has to do with anything having to do with the rotation of the Earth or whatever, but it's just really weird. And I've always looked at the autumnal and the, what is the spring equinox?
Vernal
equinox. I've always looked at those as that is the start of something really interesting. And of course, I don't balance eggs on their end anymore. But I do go around on the first day of fall. I go around in the house. I've been doing this for a couple of years now. And I decorate. I redecorate the house for fall. And so all the summer decorations come down. All the plants and all that stuff go down and get put away for another year. And then I get all the fall decorations out. So when everyone comes home at the end of the day, it's the house smells of pumpkin spice lattes. And they got the fall colors going on. And that is the start of fall, for me at least. Rodrigo, how do you sit on this?
Well, definitely for the longest time, I measured the end of summer sort of by when school starts. For me, the end of summer was when football season starts, right, which actually starts before school actually starts, especially in Kansas. So fall, basically summer ends when my job clicked over to from like doing a... like doing live pledge to going out and shooting football every day. That was the start of fall for me. But now that I don't do that anymore, it's probably going to be Labor Day, because my current job is very tied to when people clean their houses. Because it's like there's all these donations involved.
Yeah.
So they start cleaning them at Memorial Day, and then, you know, while the weather is nice, because here it rains for the majority of the year, but the summers are pretty dry. So it's just furniture season, like people bringing stuff out of their houses and dropping them off as donations. So I'm hoping that now that Labor Day has passed, that'll die down a little bit. But we'll just have to see. It is weird,
though. Summer clothes start coming in. All the bathing suits will come in.
Yeah. For the sake of simplicity, I always think of the seasons as 3 months, right? So there's three summer months, three winter months, and so on and so forth. And really, it was weird because it had been like 90 degrees, 80 degrees, 80 degree days, 70 degree days. And then on September 1st, it just dropped.
Yeah.
Like the temperature just had this huge drop. So it's like somebody was like, oh no, it's supposed to be fall. And like just like flip the giant switch.
I should have been mean and put in when the first pumpkin spice latte ads appear, because those just happened like last week. I saw them popping up on Twitter and Starbucks and other places.
Well, you know, and And things get earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're already seeing Halloween, definitely.
Oh, Halloween's our store. They've got the Christmas aisles are already set up.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can't go by the marketing calendar because that one, since they're always trying to beat the rush, that one, it just keeps getting earlier and earlier and earlier. And eventually, it's just going to be completely out of phase. Kind of like our actual calendar is with the Earth.
Yes, yes. Right now, it definitely is. Is there a pumpkin spice incense that you can burn?
Mm-hmm.
If there's not, I mean, they're really, that's a billion-dollar idea right there. You want to have to try.
I'm sure there is.
Candles too.
It might not be called pumpkin spice because the pumpkin spice is nutmeg, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Pumpkins, your pumpkin spice latte contains zero pumpkin. That flavor is basically nutmeg, cinnamon, and a couple other things. And that's that flavor, that kind of like that pumpkin pie kind of flavor.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from. So there probably are nutmeg scented candles. And if you put one on, it'll probably smell like a latte.
I've got a week to find some. So there we go. Because basically,
go to the
next
Yankee
week.
Candle store. They have everything.
They don't have any Yankee candles here.
Yeah, okay. No damn Yankee candles.
Go to the Yankee candles.
I was
store.
In Civilization last week. It wasn't impressive.
Except for the comic shop candles. That you just spent 10 minutes gushing over.
Yeah. No, that was the only cool thing. But the rest of society, bah, I could do without it. Especially all that stupid traffic. Why don't you get people to do their cities when people aren't around, Matthew?
That's why they do it in the summer.
Yeah, that's when everybody's around. All right, summer's about to come to an end, Matthew, and when does everyone say summer is coming to an end for them?
Oh, whopping 51% say the fall equinox. Good going, people who know literal is the best way to answer. 37% saying when school starts, 12% saying Labor Day. I don't know about Labor Day. I've never considered Labor Day to be autumn. Day is still like fall.
I think people look at it as the symbolic end of summer. Because like
sort of
that's
gateway.
Yeah, because it ties into when school starts back up. Yeah. And again, you've got the Memorial Day vacation at the beginning and the Labor Day at the end. And all the marketing, as Rodrigo was talking about, pushes these big sales and all the events that take place between these two bookend weekends of the quote unquote season. And I think that's why people take a look at it as the end of summer. And I'm totally OK with that. Yeah. But balancing eggs.
I know that it's the end of summer when I have to go wake up Billy Joe because, you know, September.
Oh, and yeah. Poor Billy Joe. He's still asleep.
Well, I thought he jumped off the bridge.
No, that's Billy Joe McAllister.
Oh, okay.
It's his cousin.
Mm.
People have always done that. I mean, the thing is, like, people do try to, like, lump stuff together. They're like, okay, so we would have one more week of fall. But Labor Day is just so convenient to just say, like, here's the end, right? And people have always been hitching holidays to the equinoxes and the solstices. I mean, there is, like, a major Christian holiday that basically goes with every solstice and equinox, except for the summer one.
Oh, yeah, because they have to put down those pagans and their crazy rituals.
Well, there's plenty of pagans ones as well. Like, you know. Right. It's just like a very convenient thing to do it right smack in the middle of a season or right as the seasons are changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because then you have a visual signifier of when it happens.
Listeners, new and old, please head over to MajorSpoilers.com. Cast your vote in the Major Spoilers poll of the week and share your thoughts on why you consider one of those choices your pick. And we love reading them, and so does everyone else. So get over there, MajorSpoilers.com.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a great way to hear your audio. Now, depending on if you get on, I don't know what Tweaked Audio is going to be doing with the new iPhone 7, but I'm sure they're going to come up with a fantastic solution because this company puts out some great earphones. Fantastic sound, fantastic quality. TweakedAudio.com sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers podcast. When you head over to Tweaked Audio, use the checkout code MAJOR, M-A-J-O-R, and you're going to get 33% off the price. Hey, we're already into the fall season, as we were just talking about. You've got Halloween coming up. You got Thanksgiving gifts that you have to prepare for people. And then right on top of that is Christmas and the big holiday shopping season. Then get your shopping done early. Go over to tweakedaudio.com, use the checkout code MAJOR. Save 33%. Get all your holiday shopping done in one place, one time. And everyone will thank you for that gift of tweaked audio headphones, earbuds.
Hey, Steven.
All that cool stuff. Yes.
Did you know that Tweaked Audio sells apparel?
Yeah, they do. They sell a lot of stuff over there.
Ooh, what yeah, were you looking at? There's like an actual Tweaked Audio t-shirt, and it's got like an earth with like headphones.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cute.
They also have bags and accessories and replacement buds and all sorts of things that you can get. I have I've got one of those little day packs. I can just throw things in if I'm going to take my son to soccer or something.
Uh-huh.
So it's all good stuff over there at Tweaked Audio. I'm glad that they are a longtime sponsor of majorspoilers.com. You can even get some Tweaked Audio stickers. I think they still throw in stickers when you place an order.
Nice.
So go over and check them out. They're good people. TweakedAudio.com. They stand behind all their products, too. That's the nice thing. If it breaks, let them know. They'll replace it. You know what happened last week?
What's that?
Apparently, it was the 50th anniversary of the first United States of America broadcast of the first Star Trek episode. Yeah. Apparently, the Canadians either got it the week before or the day before or something. But Star
Canadians.
Trek, 50 years.
So 50 I thought, years.
50 years. So I thought this week we could take a look at a comic book series that, or at least the first volume, mm-hmm. The Gold Key Archives of Star Trek. If you have never read this, ladies and gentlemen, you are in for a flippy, trippy treat. Star Trek, The Gold Key Archives. Now, I didn't know that these comic books existed until I was probably 10, 11 years old. Yeah. And I lived out in the country, so I didn't really have access to comic books, comic book stores, anything like that. My friend lived about a mile away, lived out in the country on the farm. And he and I were, you know, friends growing up until you hit high school and you actually get a car, and then you can leave that nerd alone and go do your own thing.
Right.
But he came over one day and he's like, check this out. And he had this big, fat book that was a Star Trek comic. And it was like, I don't know, I think it was 12 issues in that one. I don't think it was six.
The Enterprise logs, I think, were 10 or 12. You're right. Yeah.
It was big. But I looked at this.
Yeah, those came out in 76, 77, I think.
Yeah, he had that for a while. And it was probably, it may have been 78, 79, somewhere around there. Because I remember I was young.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away by this thing. And he had it. We were reading it. And he was not a comic book person. But he treasured that book. And I was like, can I borrow that book for a couple of days? And I'd keep it for like a couple of weeks. And then he'd call and say, can I have that back? And then he'd have it for a while. And then about 6 months later, I'd get the itch to read some more crazy adventures of the Star Trek crew that looks nothing like, and we'll talk about this in a moment, looks nothing like the Enterprise crew that you saw on the television series. But I just love flipping through it because the adventures were crazy. The dialogue was crazy. The art was crazy. But, it was something good about the Gold Key Star Trek.
Well, and honestly, Gold Key Star Trek is more Gold Key than it ever is Star Trek.
Interesting. And, I mean,
yeah, there's a Gold Key House style. And if you ever read Gold Key's other adaptations, they did Journey to the Bottom of the Sea. They did Sea Hunt with Lloyd Bridges. Forever, they had a Twilight Zone book. The Twilight Zone book outlasted the Twilight Zone show by a good 19 years. Mm-hmm. And they had their own staff of guys who would write these stories that, as we see in these issues, bear little to no resemblance.
Well, so my understanding is even though the book came out the show kicked off in 1966, that Drake, the writer, Arnold Drake, had never seen an episode. And in fact, they had started production of these. It's kind of like the Star Wars comics, right? Uh-huh. Where they had kind of started production of these comics before the episodes had really caught on. And certainly Drake had never watched any of the episodes. And then all of the art were done by these Italian guys who weren't even in the United States Star Trek. I don't even know what this is. And because they'd not seen the show or not had read anything about Star Trek, especially for the artists, they were just shipped a bunch of like headshots and set pictures. And they're like, here you go. Draw us a comic. And so it's a comic. Well. They drew a comic, but
it does explain all the it does explain all the green sweaters.
Yes.
How everybody wears green sweaters, and of course, in issue two, we get Kirk's wonderful, memorable catchphrase, "Howling Comets."
Oh yeah. Man, this thing is full of
but boy,
great things.
Can they draw the hell out of that Enterprise or what?
Oh man, I mean, again, there are so many inaccuracies between the TV and the comic book. You know, like the Enterprise entering the atmosphere so it can do stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we
and
see
it's
that
the rockets coming out of the back of the nacelles.
Right. And just
the
transport. What is
great.
It called? The teleportation room.
The teleportation room where you keep the teleporter.
Yes.
And Janice Rand is wearing a hat throughout issue one,
which I think,
which I'm pretty sure is
like
Janice Rand's hair.
Nice. They just colored it.
Yeah,
they
just
colored it red.
But I couldn't remember if in one episode she was actually wearing a hat like that. Wasn't she doing that in like the pilot episode or something?
I don't remember. I don't think Janice Rand was in the pilot episode, if we're talking about the same pilot episode.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't
Where
know.
Where No Man Has Gone Before had Sally Kellerman, but I don't think it had Janice Rand.
But that hat on her head was so influential that I always thought of her that way, that she's the one wearing the hat in this. Mm. I was trying to get back into the first issue because, you know, here's the mission. What is Starfleet's mission there, Rodrigo?
To discover whether there is life in this planet full of trees.
To seek out new life and new civilization, right? And so what do they do in the first issue? Oh my gosh, here's a planet that's that creates spores and turns living things into these plant things. We must decimate the entire planet.
Yes.
Nuke it from space and let nothing live.
The least Star Trek moment ever anywhere in Star Trek is they destroy an entire habited planet full of creatures.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we will destroy them with our laser banks so that we can protect the rest of the universe. And I'm like, they could not have chosen a better non-Star Trek moment to open this Star Trek comic.
Not only do you see them nuking it from orbit, but you also see a shot of the Enterprise flying over the surface, shooting out its laser beams, and the Earth all caught on fire, and these tree people running around on fire.
No!
I mean, talk
cannibal
about
tree people.
Talk about, well, I mean,
give
everybody's got to eat something.
They're cannibal tree people.
Well,
we eat
plants. This was just like a weird Twilight Zone episode of imagine a world where instead of people eating plants, the plants eat the people.
Oh, Dr. McCoy in his iconic yellow suit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and James Kirk with his black hair.
Yeah.
And poor Scotty. You can't even tell it's Scotty.
Scotty is blonde in a couple of these.
Yeah.
Spock always looks good. And part of that is because Leonard Nimoy has such distinctive features. And part of, well, even when his ears get huge and are like 4 feet tall, you can still tell that it's Spock. But sometimes you'll get this weirdly perfect Shatner face.
Yeah.
And then in the next panel, it's like, I have no idea who this character
is. Yeah, it's because, again, going back to the artists, all they had were headshots. So they had no idea how tall these people were. They didn't know what they looked like from various angles. All they had were these big headshots. So, yeah, in the close-ups.
Probably black and white, too.
Yeah, if you look in, like, in the second story, if you look on, what page is it? Maybe it's it's the first, second page, second panel, where he's kind of looking right at the audience.
Yeah,
it looks like Kirk, but then you flip the next page onto page 8 and you look in the lower right hand corner and he looks like a second James Bond.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, he does. Yeah, he looks like Sean Connery.
No, not Sean Connery. The other one.
George Lazenby?
Lord George Lazenby.
Sure. I think he looks like Connery.
Okay.
There are some very Connery Kirks in these.
And so it was just like,
there's a couple of John Wayne Kirks that entertain the crap out of them.
But then when you look at him from the side or from the back, you know, three quarter back, Kirk looks nothing like Kirk. And I think the art is good for the time period.
Yeah.
And
the art is lovely even for today.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And really, it really shines when it's allowed to do its own thing, when it's like weird, like, you know, living wheelbarrows building a society, or when it's like big, weird green aliens that would never be in Star Trek because they didn't have that much green paint to paint 10 extras. Like, that's actually when these comics really shine. It's not really Star Trek-y looking, it's still really cool to look at.
And it's cool how they're trying to interpret technology. You know, like in the TV series, you would just pop in this little cartridge or this little flat disc or a flat square to play back anything or to see anything. And yet when we get into the invasion of the city builders, here's Spock going, let me load up this reel of film so we can take a look at this this planet from high above.
I love the fact that throughout episode one or issue one, Kirk is talking into his tricorder as though it's the communicator. That's wonderful. And there are some shots of the phasers where the phasers turn into these huge frap guns, but they're still recognizably drawn as a phaser. It's just that it looks like they had no reference for scale. They had like, here's a picture of this frap gun.
Yeah.
So it's clearly an enormous gun, but it's fascinating to look at this because it feels like an alternate world version of Star Trek.
And the interesting thing is kind of to keep the Star Wars fans happy, this same thing kind of happened with the Star Wars comics, right, Matthew, when they first came out, the first, six issues of Star Wars?
The first six issues were based on a script treatment and set photos. And then in issue seven, they had to start making up their own stories. And that's where we started getting things like Jackson, the giant green rabbit, and Han Solo and his Magnificent Seven. And there's one point where space termites are eating the Millennium Falcon.
Well, even in the...
And it's some of the best books in the series for me.
If you go back and look at those original Marvel comics, the first six issues, it's like Darth Vader is green and the Death Star looks nothing like the Death Star. And it's just, these are one of these things that happen when the creators or the comic book creators have no frame of reference for anything. They can't see the TV show in the case of Star Trek. They don't have any access to the movie, and they're just going with their own imaginations. And of course, it's comic books, so who's going to read this stuff? I wonder.
The thing. In 1967, there was no such thing as replayability.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to see Journey to Babel again, you waited until that sucker came around in the rotation weeks and weeks later.
Or months later.
Yeah, and this... these were something you could reread and go through and go over. I mean, if you think about it, this is some of the first Star Trek I was ever exposed to.
Yeah.
It was one of those same books. And I remember it vividly. And I remember specific moments from the collected issue. The one that I first read was either three or four. It's the one that has Kirk with a perfectly drawn left arm with a right hand coming out of the sleeve. But these are the things that people remember. These were designed to be the experiences that kids could take and read over and over and over while they waited for the next Saturday night episode of Star Trek.
Yeah. I wonder, and I had already seen the reruns. I was watching reruns of the Sunday mornings when they would show it on Channel 41. Oh, yeah, because it was, what came first, Star Trek or Wild Wild West? I think Wild Wild West was
first. Star Trek.
Okay.
Wild West came out a year later, I think.
No. I mean on the rerun Sunday mornings.
Oh, Wild Wild West was on before it.
Yeah, before Star Trek, because that's how I'd always get into Wild Wild West, because I'd be like, what time does Star Trek start? Ah, oh, the stupid Western. What is going on with this guy? This is kind of cool. My dad would only, for Wild 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 West, he would only watch the intro because he really liked the song and the animation for Wild Wild West. really weird. I digress. I'm wondering, as I'm looking at Invasion of the City Builders, I'm wondering at this point in comics history, how much of an influence Jack Kirby has on comic book artists around the world? Because as you look at this, you see some kind of Kirby dot influence, the citizens who are wearing these weird biker outfits kind of look like Kirby-esque creations or at least designs. And a lot of the city stuff, it kind of follows a Kirby design. So I'm wondering how much Kirby had as an influence in any of these books.
Is that issue two or issue three?
This is issue three, The Invasion of the City Builders.
Issue three came out in December of 68. So at that point, Marvel Comics was a bona fide worldwide huge phenomenon. 68 was the point where everything busted open. It was Silver Surfer. It was Captain America. It was, you know, the Hulk on TV with his cool Hulk cartoon. I mean, Marvel Comics were huge. And Kirby had been in the industry for over 25 years in 68. So, yeah, I'd say it's 100% possible.
Well, especially with his Marvel work, I think is
yeah,
seems reflective in these panels that we're looking at.
Yeah. The thing that's really interesting to me is when they're drawing scenes that feel Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
there's still something
off.
off, but they're so pretty.
Yeah,
you know, when they step into the teleport room and Sulu is running the I think it's Sulu. Okay, I don't know. It could be Lieutenant Garfinnen, but he's running the thing and beaming them down to the planet. It looks cool, and you're like, that's the clearly the transporter pad mm-hmm. from the top, and then mm-hmm. just but the rest of it just kind of looks like something out of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and it's. It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and really, it's just like, I mean, can you imagine being given like five headshots and mm-hmm. like a script and being like, draw this? It's like, you have to fill in so much. You know, mm-hmm, like, yeah. I mean, I think all of us have, like all three of us have worked in television, like producing shows, right? It's like, how much of a pain in the butt is it when you don't have an asset, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
It's like, you need this. It's like, okay, and here this logo is going to come in. We don't have that logo. Do I have to make this logo? Yeah. Do I have to sit down and design a logo right now? Is that what needs to happen? And this is like panel by panel. These guys had to do that because they didn't have any references.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they do a great job. It doesn't look like Star Trek, but how could it possibly, right?
And
right.
And the other thing, again, and this is something that I think that happens in adaptation, is even dialogue seems not natural. I mean, the dialogue that comes out of Spock's mouth.
Spock spends a lot of time yelling, "Do not disturb me, Captain."
Spock is a stone cold bastard in this, just all the way through.
He's like,
I may have enjoyed being captain too much. I may not return command.
Oh yeah, there's the episode where they get stranded on the prison planet, and Kirk's like, don't let these prisoners on board, and that's an order, and then he's up there and they're like, oh, surely you're not going to listen to this, and Spock's like, screw that, I'm the captain, I'll do whatever I want. Yo,
he made me the captain before he tried to give me orders, and now I'm the captain, so I don't have to listen to him.
It's really crazy. It is, and here's the thing, and this is I'm reading the digital version now, but back in my day, can you imagine two young kids who have been fighting, not fighting over this, but reading and rereading and passing it back and forth in a mm-hmm. really crappy newspaper print trade paperback of this. I mean, mm-hmm. pages were yellow, and that was just because of the comic print. So when I look at this now and I don't see dots, I don't see, you know, I don't see the faded color. I don't see pages where we've
burned.
Yeah. Or even just holding the comic and you're getting so intense where the pages are rubbing against each other and a hole wears in between the cover. I mean, it's fantastic to see these things restored, mm-hmm. but there was something about it I can still remember because my friend's family used wood fire heat in the wintertime a lot. So their house always had this, you know, chimney smell to it, and that seeped into that comic. So if I had that comic in my bedroom and my friend came over looking for it, man, he knew exactly where it was because all you had to do is
smelled like wood.
Smelled like burnt wood.
Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, oh no.
That's really weird. What I really love are like the peaks of the technology.
Mm-hmm.
There's a point where we see a cutaway of the ship.
Yes, and it's like and three decks.
If we look at the people inside, the Enterprise is like 80 feet long. And that they clearly had photo reference on the phasers and the phaser rifles, but the scale is all funny. It's beautiful to look at. And of course, I will never get over the rocket trails propelling the ship.
Oh yeah,
from the back of the nacelles, and it's so beautiful.
So what is
these guys had so much creativity.
Yeah, they certainly did. What's kind of the bottom line, Rodrigo? Is this series, is it worth checking out even from a historical perspective, or is this so off from what people think about Star Trek that they would be better off just going on with the ongoing comic book adventures that we see from IDW Publishing, and Gold Key is just that kind of a footnote of comics that are kind of weird?
Yeah. So for me, this is very interesting because of its origin, right? Because it is just like someone else being given this set of things and being like, do something with it. And what it is not what the original creators made independently. So it's a fascinating study. So if you're interested in that, then I'd say definitely check it out. If you're interested in that, this kind of sci-fi, this is like prime comic book, like two issues per storyline, kind of like, you know, actual literal cliffhanger stuff. So if you're into that, you know, if you're into like old Legion of Superheroes where they were like, we have to fly to the monster planet. Ah, now we're here. Let's fight some monsters. I think there's a lot to like here. And, you know, if you always thought, well, William Shatner would have looked a lot better wearing green and with black hair, then this is the comic for you.
Oh, and plus, don't forget, everyone in the Star Trek universe speaks Esperanza, even though no one in the comic actually speaks Esperanza.
Sure.
Matthew, what about you? Is this something that is worth buying, checking out? It's this first volume on Comixology is $11.99. I'm sure it's the same for the print. This is an IDW restored version.
I think the print is a little spendier. I want to say the print is like $17, although I was looking at it on Amazon, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I say absolutely, but you have to keep in mind I have a buy on site for most Gold Key titles, especially high profile adaptations like Star Trek, because of what they are. They're not Roddenberry's vision of a unified future where everybody's happy. But the art in these is fascinating. The ship always looks amazing. The thing that you have to keep in mind about any Gold Key comic is that Gold Key was a company whose main thrust was as many books to the stands as possible. And based on that theory, it's amazing the quality that you get out of these books. And these stories don't feel like Star Trek. They don't necessarily look like Star Trek, but they make for good reads. And they're fascinating to look at. And as long as you're not going to be one of those lol, fail, point and laugh guys, they're hysterical to look at and say, look what they did with Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Okay, this alien planet is split in two, see, and they're led by two guys named Justin. And these two guys named Justin each have a planet, so they're going to save the day by getting a magnetic sphere from space and sticking it between the planets. But before that can happen, there's an asteroid that punches a bunch of holes in the ship, which, by the way, probably should have killed them. I would have known that even when I was seven. But it's just, it's wonderful to read this because it feels like some early examples of fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But it's done so professionally and it's done so well that these are fun reads. These are good to read in and of themselves, just as long as you don't expect them to be Journey on the Edge of Forever.
Right. You know, for me, this is total kid flashback nostalgia stuff. I mean, like I said, having that book in my hands and being able to read these really long tales. I mean, these are not adventures that are wrapped up in 8 pages. As Rodrigo said, this feels like a double sized issue when you go in and you read this, these adventures. And yeah, they're not, it's not Star Trek that you know. It's not even Enterprise. But it is this very different look at a Star Trek universe. So there is some historical value in reading this. I would say this is definitely a borrow if you're able to find it or borrow it from someone. I'm not sure that this is, yeah, like a library or, you know, like me, a friend who had it and you can just borrow it from them for a month at a time. But this is not a must have book for me, but it certainly brought back a lot of memories and it's certainly a lot of fun. And I'm glad we had a chance on this 50th anniversary year of Star Trek to take a look at it because it was fun. And if you want to just look at it from the perspective of what happens when you give a bunch of people zero assets and tell them to make something that's supposed to be in line with brand marketing,
I want more of this. I know that there's a Star Trek and there's Star Wars, but I don't mean the Star Trek specifically. Oh, okay. Like, I wanna see like what happens when somebody who has never seen the Ninja Turtles they're like, okay, well, go make Ninja Turtles comics, right? It's like, are there how many more franchises are there where this happened? Like, I wanna see what happens. I know that, for example, when the old like Superman serials were coming out, they were all in black and white, so they would make colored posters on like Superman had like a red outfit with like green trunks and a black cape and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, but those were just like publicity things. Like, are there more things like this where there was like nobody knew what the right hand was doing?
Oh, I'm sure
there's
there are.
A ton of it if you look through Gold Key. And again, Gold Key adapted weird stuff. For a while, they had a Brady Bunch license. So if you want to read Woody Woodpecker comics featuring the kids from the Brady Bunch, you can, thanks to the magic that is Gold Key. Western Publishing, Gold Key, for a while, they were also called Whitman. Mm-hmm. And if you go back far enough, they'll be under Dell. But they had tons of stuff. They had, like, all of the cartoons. They had Adam 12. They had Emergency.
Dr. Solar.
Yep. They didn't have the $6 million man, but the $6 million man from Charlton is another good example of comic books taking a character and just going, doo-hoo-hoo.
Oh, yeah. If you look at what Valiant, if you look at what Valiant has right now, a lot of that stuff, well, maybe it's not Valiant anymore, but Dr. Solar, Man of the Atom, Magnus Robot Fighter, Turok, Dinosaur.
Turok, Son of Stone.
Son of Stone, not Dinosaur Hunter. You know, that was all Gold Key stuff.
And those were their long-running properties. And then,
who are those at now? Those are at, are they at
The last time I saw them, they were at Dark Horse.
Oh, Dark Horse, okay.
Yeah, they were under Shooter at Dark Horse, but that's been like 2008, 2009. Oh, yeah.
Just go look at their list of licensed comics. I mean, it is all over the place as far as what they have. The girl from
And that was, the thing. They would buy a license. Yes, they had the Get Smart license.
Mm-hmm.
Get Smart books are fun.
Yeah.
They are not Get Smart stories, but they are fun.
Yeah, so there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Take a look at it if you can get your hands on it. Star Trek, the Gold Key Archives. They're available from IDW now, and they're totally remastered, so you're getting good, clean art. But if you're ever digging through a back issue bin and you come across this stuff, it might be worth grabbing it if you can find it and if it's a first printing from that aspect.
Gold Keys ain't going to be cheap these days, but they're always worth the effort.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for downloading. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for sharing and being part of the Major Spoilers experience. Certainly thank you to all of our VIP and Patreon members. If you enjoyed this show and want to see it continue, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Give as little as you want or as much as you want. It doesn't matter. Every little bit helps and goes right back into the programming that we create at majorspoilers.com. Matthew, where can people find more of you?
You can find me at Mighty King Cobra on the Twitter. Same place on the Tumblr. I posted something for the first time in like 3 months on Tumblr, so go check it out. It may be funny, it may be not. Who's to say? You can find me on Facebook if you look hard enough, but I'm no fun there, so there's no sense.
Yeah. And Rodrigo, what about you?
At Fearsome Critter on Twitter and Magic Turtle on Tumblr. So if you want to just hear me. If you want to just hear me cry and cry about my Overwatch lack of expertise.
I'm no good at EVA. I'm losing Ovion.
How do you drop 1,000 points?
Well, by being bad at it. Oh. Basically, it starts out with a placement with you play like a bunch of placement matches and then they give you a starting score where basically the game tries to decide where you fit.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing we know is that that starting score really just compresses everyone. So right off the bat, the good players like shoot up and the bad players just like get thrown down. So there's also there's a lot of stuff going on. Basically there's this one character that I started playing and I'm winning a lot more now. And I think it's because that character is very strong, but also nobody wants to play him. So now that someone in the team is playing him, the team's doing better. So I might just start playing that character always and see how I do.
There you go. Well, keep practicing. That's what I keep telling my son. Keep practicing. You will get better at anything you do. And listeners, if you want to hear more crazy conversations, join Zach Wolf and I this week when we talk about not quite Stranger Things, but Stranger Things on this week's Zach on Film. You will find it in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network Master Feed, as well as a bunch of other shows we do. So many shows, so much content just for you. And we know that you love comics, and we do too. And that is why we do it. And we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books, or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. Continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce steel. Rogers shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. And I don't care if Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash. Or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.